When my daughter Zia was growing up, I spent a lot of time watching Disney movies with her. You know, movies like The Little Mermaid, The Lion King, Pocahontas, The Jungle Book. And after watching The Little Mermaid for the 50th time, a parent starts to ask some questions. Like, how many more times can my daughter watch this movie? Why can't I get these songs out of my head? You know, they did a remake of Beauty and the Beast, a live action movie that just came out not that long ago, and I watched it, and it still has the same soundtrack, and I couldn't believe it. I was singing along with the soundtrack. I haven't seen that movie or heard that soundtrack in over 20 years. But one of the biggest questions and most important questions that I started to ask are, why are so many of the characters in Disney movies orphaned? Many of them are either motherless or fatherless or somehow separated from their parents. And there's a long list. There's Elsa and Anna in Frozen. There's Cinderella, Bambi, Ariel in The Little Mermaid. There's Simba in The Lion King, Lilo and Stitch, Mowgli in The Jungle Book. There's Peter Pan and all of the Lost Boys. There's Snow White, Pinocchio, Belle in Beauty and the Beast, and Nemo, and the list goes on and on. And it's not just in Disney movies. It's everywhere in the movies. In Star Wars, there's Luke Skywalker. There's Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, Harry Potter. What's this all about? Some have theorized that Walt Disney was living with guilt about the death of his own mother that he felt responsible for, and that he was working it out in his movies. But you see, it's not just in Disney movies. It's everywhere in the movies. I think it's about the fear of being alone, the fear of being abandoned or orphaned. That is a fear in humans that goes way back, and it is the greatest fear for children. Maybe the point of all of these characters in these stories is to help children to be able to confront that fear and learn how to grow up on their own, or learn how to meet the challenges of life on their own, how to get on with life. I think Jesus addressed this fear when he said to his disciples, "I won't leave you orphaned." These words come from Jesus' farewell discourse found in the Gospel of John. This is a passage that I have read at countless funerals and memorial services and at the graveside. I have read it because they are words of comfort to those who are grieving and struggling with loss and saying goodbye to their beloved. What was it like for the disciples, the followers of Jesus, those who had committed their lives to following him, and now he is saying that he is leaving them? This was new ground for the disciples. And this night before his crucifixion was a night of firsts. From seeing their master kneeling before them, washing their feet, to Judas storming out after Jesus says, "One of you will betray me." And now he is saying, "Yes, I'm leaving you, but I'm not leaving you alone. I am not leaving you abandoned. I am not leaving you orphaned." I think that's something we all need to hear and to be reminded of when we most need to remember it. You see, the disciples were just ordinary human beings, just like you and me. And in this moment, they experienced something extraordinary and ordinary in the same moment. They were having an experience of the human condition. This is what it is to be human. This is life. They were saying goodbye to the one they loved, to the one they had been following, the one they had devoted their lives to, the one who had been their true north, their guide. We all know something about that kind of loss, don't we? I imagine there were lots of tears streaming down the beards of those disciples in the upper room that night. Jesus also says, "Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid." I don't know if it was just one or all of them, but after he said that, they said, "Wait, what?" How can I not have a troubled heart? How can we not be afraid? And Jesus says, "I do not give to you as the world gives." We know what the world gives. We know what the world has to offer. The world gives us troubles that we carry in our hearts, and the troubled heart is something that we share with the disciples. We know about troubles. Trouble is in our hearts, and fear is all around. We have sung the words to the old spiritual, "Nobody knows the troubles I've seen. Nobody knows the sorrow." We know trouble. We've seen trouble. And we don't have to look very far. There's a lot that troubles our hearts. There's trouble in the South. There's trouble in Washington. There's trouble in the Middle East. There's a world of troubles. There's trouble with shootings in our schools, in our places of worship. There's trouble brewing all around. There's trouble in the streets with homelessness and poverty and violence. There's the trouble of famine and war. There's the trouble of racism and white supremacy. We see our brothers and sisters of color subjected to the violence of a system that says they are less than. There is trouble in the LGBTQ community of growing marginalization and disenfranchisement. And there's trouble on the border. And children are being separated from their parents, their greatest fear becoming a reality. And so we sing with the old bluesman, Lightnin' Hopkins, Bad luck and trouble hanging around my door. Bad luck and trouble hanging around my door. You believe it, I'm a-hoping won't come back no more. Goodbye, trouble. Goodbye, trouble. And there's trouble on this fragile planet with warming temperatures and rising waters and the extinction of a million species. And we have a sense that what we do to mend this hurting world will never be enough and will not make a difference. Our hearts are troubled. Our hearts are troubled by disappointment and fleeting relationships with vulnerable people who hurt us and leave us. We live our lives trying to give ourselves over to relationships only to see marriages crumble and leave us feeling bitter and alone. Our hearts are troubled by shattering trauma and by the slow ache of depression and mental illness. Our hearts are troubled by grief and seeing those we love slip away into addictions, slip away into violence, slip away into death that takes each and every one of us, and always, always too soon. Living in this world that gives us trouble, we, like the disciples, face trauma and suffering and loss, pain and sadness, and then somehow must survive. Somehow we must continue to live and breathe, even when it seems impossible. I don't know about you, but it seems to me that this world can leave us feeling like the floor has fallen out from beneath us, feeling alone, numb, and helpless. So Jesus tells his followers that he does not give as the world gives. He does not leave them. He does not leave them orphaned. In Eugene Peterson's paraphrase of the Bible, The Message, Jesus' parting words are rendered this way: I don't leave you the way you're used to being left, abandoned and bereft. Jesus' followers are hearing the promise that Jesus will not leave them the way they're used to being left. Instead, he leaves them with peace. He leaves them with the Holy Spirit, the advocate, the Spirit of truth that God will send. You know, I think it's best to think about the Holy Spirit as the continuing presence of Christ in our lives. But we can also think of the Holy Spirit as like the prompter who stands over on the wings of this stage that we call life, where we are playing out the human condition. And the Spirit, the prompter, reminds us that there is a way to live. There is a way to live in this world of troubles. It is the way of love and faith and courage. The way that Jesus lived and taught. As a chaplain working in the hospital, I see people with troubled hearts every single day. And I also see people living the way of love and faith and courage. I see teams of doctors, nurses, social workers, therapists, and chaplains coming together to bring comfort and healing to the patients they care for. I see family members at the bedside of their loved ones, supporting them as they hear the news of the diagnosis or as they go through treatment or as they approach the end of life. And I know that it helps. It helps knowing that we are not alone as we face the world's troubles. It is that human connection that brings healing and strength and courage. I met a patient that we will call Catherine. I met her in the context of a palliative care consult in the unit where she was in the hospital. At that time, the medical team was still trying to come up with a diagnosis of what appeared to be some kind of neurological disorder, a disorder that had left her paralyzed and using mechanical ventilation to breathe. And I was blown away by her courage as she faced the unknown, the uncertainty, the uncontrollable. I appreciated how she insisted on steering the ship of her medical care by setting limits with the medical team. She had decided and demanded that she wanted a time to herself every day, a time when she would not be disturbed. No turns, no treatment, no vitals being checked. This was her time, a time that allowed her to gather strength to face the troubles and the challenges of the day. And I asked her where she got her strength from. And without hesitation, she said, "My family. They are everything to me." Finally, the diagnosis of ALS came, and Catherine continued to fight for an acceptable quality of life. I appreciated the way she would utilize spiritual care. She didn't have a lot of time to talk because she had to use this special valve on her trach that allowed her to phonate, and it was tiring. So she didn't have a lot of time. So she would cut to the chase. And she would talk about all of the losses that she was grieving because of this disease, like never being able to ride a horse again, something that she had loved so much. She expressed her feelings of grief and sadness, her anger, her frustration, her fears. You see, she knew that by sharing her feelings, it would make them just a little bit easier to carry. She also turned to her spirituality, which was a source of strength for her. She had described herself as spiritual but not religious. That meant that she had a connection with the transcendent that gave her a sense of meaning and purpose in her life, but she didn't express this connection by being a part of any organized religion. Yet she always requested a prayer at the end of our visits. And I always prayed that she would find peace in knowing that she was not alone, and that she was surrounded by love and courage. Catherine eventually discharged to an intensive rehab facility where she was going to try to get stronger so she could get that quality of life that she was looking for. She spent about a week there, and then she decided that she had had enough. She decided to sign on to hospice, and she went home, where she died peacefully, surrounded by the family that was everything to her. And I will never forget her. And she will always be a part of me. And she reminds me every day how to live despite the troubles that the world gives. I'm not sure if it was St. Francis or Martin Luther, or maybe it was neither one of them, I don't know, but once they were asked what he would do if he knew that tomorrow the world was coming to an end. And he said, I would plant a tree. That is an act of love and courage. And I wonder if that comes from the peace that Jesus leaves with the disciples, this deep peace that is given to each of us, that shows us that no matter what troubles the world gives, we can be confident that love is stronger than hate, that hope is more resilient than fear and despair, and that light can and will and does break through the darkness. That's the peace that was given to Francis and to Martin Luther and to Catherine and to the disciples and to each one of us. A peace that is not the absence of troubles, but the presence of love. They found peace in knowing that God had made a home in their troubled hearts, in a world of fears. And we too are the disciples gathered in that upper room. We are the disciples who live in a world of troubles, holding pain and loss and sadness. But we are also the disciples at the empty tomb. We have the Holy Spirit, the prompter, in us and with us. We have a Spirit that is always standing alongside, that is the very presence of God, as close to us as our breath, breathing in peace and possibility into these troubled hearts of ours, and making us people of courage in this world. You know, we were going to do a time of silent reflection. We're going to skip that today. We're going to do a redo of the passing of the peace. And I want you to just turn to those on either side of you and say it like you mean it. But just say, may peace be with you. take a minute.